Welcome to the Why Did They Do This podcast, starring Dan and Jason.
Yay!
That's reasonable. Although this might be, is this the only thing that we're talking about that hasn't actually been done and not it's not a finished product of any kind?
What's that?
What we're talking about this week?
What were we talking about? I don't remember.
Dirk Benedict.
Oh yeah, Dirk Benedict.
So. I was just going to ask you to do your intro because your intro is so short that I already forgot it because I'm an idiot. Now, people who are listening, if you're fans of the A-Team, you hear me say Dirk Benedict, or Battlestar Galactica is actually just as likely or more likely. When you hear me say Dirk Benedict, you're thinking, oh, what project were they going to do with Dirk Benedict? And the answer is a Golden Girls spinoff about older men.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It's going to be called Silver Boys. And it didn't work. It really did not work.
And then we were going to try to do sort of a bosom buddies type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where they all had to dress as women
right.
to stay in this
right, exactly right.
old folks home.
But it just got sad because it was always they're always talking about just losing their wives to cancer, and that's all it reminded them of.
And Hannibal got Alzheimer's.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, we didn't mention it was all the people from the A-Team in our... version of so that's what's funny is that prior to a heavy internet saturation I was victim to a brain fart, and we took some pictures of you because I had this old Dick Tracy fedora from when I was like 9 that happened to fit you still. My head had already grown to its gigantic adult size, a 7.5 at current measurements. Either way, I was like, Dan looks like a movie star. That's awesome. I have a handsome friend. I'm going to take pictures of my handsome friend, and we're going to make up a character. And that movie
character... good thing you took advantage of that when you had the chance.
Yeah, right? Because I don't have a handsome friend. Dan, you're handsome.
I'm not handsome.
Dan,
stop it.
So handsome.
Stop it.
Daniel.
Oh, my God.
Actually, it is lucky because if we hadn't taken those pictures, Ari wouldn't have had anything to fap to. So
that's a fact.
You know,
I believe they call that schlicking.
Oh, that's disgusting. Great. I didn't need that at all. I didn't. I mean, they deserve. You're allowed to have your own word, ladies. I'm not. Anyway, point being, we called Dan Dirk Benedict because I thought that was a really cool movie name sounder thing. And then eventually came around to like the internet existed again. And I was like looking up the A-Team and that's completely where I got the name Dirk Benedict.
Yeah.
This is after I had written a lot of things about this character, starting with a fake A&E biography of him.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Which started out, again, so people, I'm sorry, I'm not sorry. There's no media to play in this episode. It's really, it's just...
You can find a scene in the script and we can... perform it.
We can do that. We can also the big thing is like I said, it's a very short script for an A&E biography style thing where the whole time we're celebrating the life of Dirk Benedict. It's in celebration of his 150th movie, but the running gag is that everybody who's interviewed, including people who should be very close to him, are surprised to find out he's alive. And that's the whole thing, which it doesn't make sense that he would be this famous movie star and no one would know, but the absurdity was what made it good. I decided in celebration of his 150th movie, I eventually decided, I think it was after, like sometime in college, I would come up with the names of each movie, the year of each movie, and the character of each movie. And since then, I've come up with synopses of most of them. So there's that. Not that we're going to read all 150 names, but we could probably go through a few of those at some point, too.
we need to make a fake IMDb page,
which I did years ago, but we need to do it again because it doesn't
update.
IMDb
it.
Doesn't look the same anymore.
No.
So we took pictures of Dan that way. They're screen captures first, and then eventually, when I had a nice camera and some black and white film, we took some portraits of you.
Yes.
And I spilled my drink on myself. It was really great. Some of those are still on lordofdance.com, right?
Yes. Yes, they are.
What's your beer sponsor? I do not have a beer sponsor because I have to drive like a responsible adult.
I am drinking my last glass of Lafroig Scotch.
What I was actually looking at. Well, Jen doesn't listen to the podcast. I was looking at birthday presents for Jen. At what year? How many years is that Scotch?
18.
18. Okay, so that's the. It's weird the difference between a 10 and a 15 year bottle, or even a 10 and a 12 year. Like, it's massive the difference. Because
yes.
I was looking up the stuff that she likes, called Dalwhinnie, and there are some reasonably priced bottles in that year range. And then, like, you jump up 5 years, and it's suddenly a $400 bottle of Scotch. And that's not happening. I mean, I love my wife, but that's,
you know. Yeah, well, you go from the 18-year in Lafroig,
mm-hmm.
is $100. The 25-year is $500.
Yeah. So I'm sure it's delicious.
It's because it's rare. Sure. They've been having to kick it around for 25 years.
Right.
You're paying for handling.
No, exactly right. Exactly right. So, you know. So I just mentioned one of my wife's upcoming birthday presents on the podcast, but that's okay. Again, she doesn't listen to it.
I can't discuss my wife's birthday present because she does listen to
She does
podcast.
Listen, so you're getting her a bottle of scotch.
I am. Actually, I'm getting me another bottle of scotch.
You should. See, that's...
With my bonus from work.
Ooh, nice. That'd be good. That's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, 150 movies... I'm looking here. Apologize.
Where did you put those so I could look at them too?
I put them in Drive, and then I shared the link with you. I can do it again. Here, add share Dirk
shared
Conrad
with me.
Movie. It's called.
I see a Dirk bio.
Yeah, that's one of the things here. Let's share with your nickname on here is Tugger Nuts. And Deco Miller at I won't say the name of it, and I basically just did. Here, I'm sharing the entire folder with you. How many email domains start with a J?
That involve using a drive of some sort.
Mm-hmm. So, it doesn't matter. So, I just shared you with you. But in here, so after, like I said, after doing that, I go to film school. I came up with the list while I was in film school because it kept my creative brain going, but I didn't do anything with it until I had the chance to actually write a couple movies in my, because when you start out you don't get to write any fucking movies, and what are you looking at?
Revisiting Oedipus.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of there's 150. Some of them are really good. One or two I'm not too happy with, but
the description of that one's amazing. The second Moving Up film finds Hamlet, because it's a sequel to Hamlet, making love to every woman in sight in order to find out which of them is his uncle.
Yeah, I recently decided, like, well, at some point I want to publish this list in some format. And I'm like, well, it doesn't work anymore just as a cute list, especially since, like, John Hodgman did his list of 700 hobos. I'm like, well, the only way I can, like, not compete, but, like, you know, push myself up is do that, do a list.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts out, because a lot of these were named in the thing. I'm trying to think, do you see, I can't search right now because my computer's not working. Is there something in there called The Front at Piermont? I think that came from here. But I can say for sure one of the first screenplays I wrote in school was called Follow Me to Tulsa, because that's what one of the road
pictures. Yeah, you have a
Front at Piermont.
The Front at Piermont. There's no description, though.
There's not, which is ironic, because that is one of the other screenplays I finished for my romantic comedy class, so I would have to. And what's funny is what's the name of the character he plays in The Front at Piermont?
Sean Corr.
Okay, so he does play the main character in that. Yeah, that was my romantic comedy. So I did. I've actually
1940?
Written two features based on these. They do take place in the 40s, because that's the only way my brain worked. And I was like, I'm gonna be that guy. I really thought I was gonna be like, I was gonna be like the Coen brothers. So
yeah.
That happened there.
He plays Geech in his very first film.
Geech, which is in Hats of Plenty.
Yep, he's a young newsboy and is discovered to bear the mark of Swedish royalty and struggles to bring the freedom of the press to Sweden because it's such a tyrannical country with their media.
Yeah, they're so oppressed over there. I mean, we'll save them one day. One day.
One day.
A lot of these names are very, like, Monty Python type names. Like, he's Cholesterol mm-hmm. H. Marmalade in one of these. in Flights of Fancy. He plays Herman Fancy, 1933, a poorly researched attempt to reach out to our European brethren during America's isolationist years. This film follows the rise of the magical Schmadolf Bittler and his band of merrymakers. So, there's that. Oh, wait. I thought all that noise was on your end, but it's on my end. Hold on one second.
Nope.
Hi, sweetie. I'm going to close the door now. Jen, are you going now to food? Jennifer. All right. I love you, Daisy. All right, anyway. Let's make a little note. That was 1716.
Welcome back.
Thank you, Dan. So, yeah, there's 150 films here, 150 names. But, like, and I did, I actually went and reread my screenplay for Follow Me to Tulsa, which is not great. But it is not bad. It's not nearly as bad as I remembered it being because it was the script I had to submit to get into the semester in LA, in which, while I did get into the semester in LA, the teacher made me think I wouldn't because he said, it's very much like a film school, film student script. And it's like, well, I'm a film student, motherfucker. So what did you expect? And B, it's still pretty creative and my teacher liked it a lot. So I don't know. It's
well,
dumb.
Maybe that's what he meant though. Cause you're trying to write a script to do the thing, right?
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
They were looking for film students. There so he was actually telling you wrote exactly what he needed you to write in order to achieve your goal.
There we are. That must be what he meant. That has to be it. I also started...
Exactly.
One of my other books that I started writing was his autobiography. I've not finished it. But I actually did, using some of your research into your own background, since he was... like supposed to be some points various times he's been your grandfather in bits of this and mm-hmm. but he does have your same background and that was part of it except I think he's Jewish if I remember correctly. He is Jewish because all my favorite comedians were Jewish and I'm like, well, I really like mm-hmm. when they talk about the old world and all these old things. He plays Vladimir Titwillow in Death for a Monarch, which I see you have highlighted.
I have.
Mm-hmm. It's pink, so you must be near there.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I clicked on it. I wasn't reading it.
Shoestrings is the name of one of the movies he's in, which I think I put in here after we had done a number of things called Shoestrings. I mean, besides our comedy album.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I don't know. This I originally wrote in 1999, so I don't know if it came from here or not. I've just always liked the word shoestrings, which I think is why we named the album that.
Most likely.
Mm-hmm. Let's see.
And so I don't think I knew about this, like all the details of what was on this list, but remember that poster I made that was like a horror movie
yes.
called Shoestrings with your face mm-hmm. on it? And now I see that that's also a horror movie.
Is it?
It's a near silent film centering around the gruesome murder of the local undertaker and as his town struggles to finish the custom cast it before midnight when the funeral home will be turned over to the city. So it's not a horror,
that's
but
right.
It involves death.
Yes, I think I made it a horror film.
It's UHF meets House on Haunted Hill is what it
exactly
is.
Exactly right, yeah. I would watch that movie, very much. A near silent film, and I wanted to know what that means. I don't know what I intended, but that's pretty funny.
He plays G in a lot of Gregory Moffat spy movies.
Yes, that's right. Gregory Moffat, who is an Irish spy. Boy, oh boy. There's a lot of Gregories. I really like the name Greg. I think we may have mentioned this before, but I've named a lot of characters in things I've written Greg, and I don't know why.
Viewed to a Man with the Thunderball Who Loved Me is one Gregory Moffat.
That's one of the
movie.
Dumber ones. They're all stupid, but that's one of the... few parody type
License titles. To Never Say Russia Is Not Enough.
That would be one of the other ones.
To Gregory with Sugar on Top.
That was pretty good.
Those are three of them.
Mm-hmm. He's in Yarmulke's Oh Boy. Yes, so the Moving Up series is supposed to be like the English, what are they called? Carry On series. And, yeah, so that's why there are several of these weird kind of sex-filled romps that all take place,
mm-hmm.
that are all Oedipus-based. that's that. Coddling McHenry's Goat. Yeah, there's several movies in a row with ing verbs because I thought that would be fun.
I like 12 Angry Grumpy Old Men. 12 retirement age jurors delay the verdict of a murder trial to remain sequestered in the only available local hotel, the Hilton. Womp womp.
Yep, his movies get dumber and more like boring as they go. His last movie is Don't Shoot, It's Grandpa. While on vacation, police officer Frank Sykes discovers that his grandfather, a recovering thief, is up to his old tricks. Recovering thief, by the way. Forced to choose between family and the law, Sykes comes up with a unique compromise. And that's when I get to, like, cop out and, like, not tell you what that compromise is. Because they're just, you know.
Well, you're not, so you shouldn't tell that in the summary
true.
Like that.
That is true. Don't give it all away, kids. For fuck's sake. For fuck's sake.
I like Malice and Wonder.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a modern retelling of Alice in Wonderland set in Nazi Germany.
I still want to do that movie or sketch where a director's, his unique take on every play he does is he sets it in Nazi Germany, because that's like the biggest cop-out to do ever since Orson Welles did it with Julius Caesar. But he did it while the Nazis were actually in power, so that's actually ballsy.
So it's a little different. It's a little different to do that than just after the fact be like,
yeah,
you know what was really emotional? WWII, let's put a movie there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it happens a lot, and I know it works, but it works because it's easy.
Yeah,
World War
II
has this weird,
it's a shortcut,
has this weird hold on us when most of the quote-unquote greatest generation is actually kind of dead, but you know, it still has this weird hold on us. I still have all my World War II stuff. This is all this also the same time when we were doing like my World War II photos, because I was obsessed with Saving Private Ryan, and I bought a whole, like, $200, which, by the way, $200 is a lot still to me, but then it was a lot to me. So I got it for my first video project. I bought a bunch of World War II costume stuff. Well, not costume, actual uniforms that fit me.
Yeah.
But you wore them. Like, it ended up putting you in all them. We put all the, actually, see, that's the one thing I didn't get to upload was all of my, like, all the movie posters and shit that I did with you in the World War II, which weren't necessarily Dirk Benedict, but they were of that ilk, because that was kind of the point, was I wanted to make old-timey movies posters and shit.
Yeah. That's, yeah, you've got pictures that are supposed to be Dirk Benedict, like, helping clean up a house or something.
Yes, those are the first ones we did, yeah. And then we took, oh, there we go, and we took some soldier pictures with the video camera, too, that looked kind of like shit, and then eventually I took some really good, well, what I think are really good World War II photos. And then those became another side project that made no sense. It was supposed to be your grandfather, but I photoshopped you into other famous World War II photos. Lounging about, usually.
And also Saving Private Ryan.
Yes, I did put you in Saving Private Ryan as well. I'm trying to think. There was one, I don't know where the movie poster is. It's a giant file, so I might not be able to find it. But I did one that I'm really proud of, and I feel like I may have turned it into a, oh, no, that's right. I had a Follow Me to Tulsa poster, and that was on my bedroom wall for a long time.
Yeah, you did.
It's got a picture. It's got Ren in the background, you in the foreground, me in one of the little photos, and my girlfriend at the time in one of the little photos, too. Oh, no, there is media I can upload for this, or is already uploaded, which is, it is not, it is like a sideways universal jump, in that you play in one of my, in my first color, first and only color 16 millimeter thing for college, you play the actor Dirk Benedict being stalked by my roommate Chad at the time, and I still like the idea. And so you're being stalked by him, but you start stalking back, and also got insulted by my teacher for that, but that's okay. It's all right. I think it looked really good.
I think that one's already online.
It is. That one's on YouTube, so I can at least post a link to that, and can't really put a clip anywhere because there's no no audio. And I at least at one point, I think I made a really good, not a really good, but a pretty good looking trailer off of that, which was better because I could have music and I could cut it the way I wanted to cut it. So it was pretty good. And you used a bunch of my titles to make, you made, let's see, where are they? You made some VHS covers or some VHS spines for the movie so that we could show his collection. You made a bunch of props for me.
That's right.
And I found the file. Those are actually uploaded too. So this is a long way of saying, people, that there's an entire universe that exists for what reason, I'm not entirely sure. But this is a 30-page script. This biography thing is 30 fucking pages. It's pretty good. It might make an okay audio thing at some point. We could record the whole thing and might be okay as an audio bit, actually, since there's no way to really shoot it visually.
You could just kind of go through it and see what things require audio. I mean, like images, and you might even be able to do it by having sort of stills.
That's true. That's true. Good point. Should do that. Oh, that's a good idea. That'll take.
We
a while.
Have a lot of pictures that you could probably.
I have a ton.
Either use raw or manipulate.
Because I always needed a fucking model for shit that I was making, so I have so many photos of you. So many photos in Photoshops, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a good
idea. Look, if you didn't take pictures of me, it would appear that I didn't even exist.
That's true. That's a good point.
There was no one else to take pictures of me.
Deanna, you're still pretty, Deanna. There's just some pictures and stuff. Anything new since we last caught up on Skype?
Found out that they're making an odd... Well, not making. They have released an Odd Couple TV show.
Oh, is it out already? I knew that was going to happen. Did you watch it?
Yeah, it's for a CBS show, it's pretty good. I mean, it's on the par of their other stuff.
Okay.
It's got Matthew Perry and Thomas Lennon.
See, Thomas Lennon's the reason I was actually curious to see
it. I know, that's why I had to watch it when I saw that it existed. Yeah. I'm like, okay, that seems weird. Looked it up, like, oh, Jesus, we have to watch it.
I interviewed a guy on Comedy on Vinyl the other day who wrote for The New Odd Couple, which was a black Odd Couple in the early 80s, also produced by Gary Marshall. Yeah. Joe Segella, you're going back to high school. That Gary Marshall. Not as famous as Paul F. Tompkins's Gary Marshall, which is really funny. It sounds like this, and it's really funny, and it makes me laugh. Gary Marshall, for those who don't know, frequents, or at least used to frequent, a nice restaurant, the only nice restaurant. No, there's two nice restaurants in North Hollywood. Vitello's and Ernie's. And Ernie's is like, maybe people don't consider that nice, but I love it. But Vitello's, and there's a chicken dish named after him there because it doesn't have stuff he's allergic to in it. In case anybody wanted to know.
What's it named?
It's probably called the Gary Marshall. I think it's what it's called. Because Chicken Gary would be weird, or Chicken Marshall would be weird also. Chicken Marshall, by the way, my favorite sitcom of his that really never took off was about a chicken who was a U.S. Air Marshal.
Yes, he did the voice of the chicken.
He did. Freeze, scumbag! It was great. Really good. Joe Segella, you're going back to high school.
I thought it was brave that they used marionettes for the chicken.
Oh, I agree. I agree. Very smooth.
Especially because they filmed on location.
Yeah, exactly right.
On the streets
right.
of New York.
The extras so most and everybody of the time, were human-sized.
Yeah, 95% of the time, the chicken was actually kind of near a fire escape or balcony. Mm-hmm. Or other raised platform in the natural environs.
Right, yeah. So it became a little weird. And
riding a bicycle behind a truck.
It's really ahead of its time. Really ahead of its time. But, you know, Jim Henson couldn't handle the pressure, and it was a bit too much for him, and he eventually quit.
Yeah, that's why he blew his brains out.
That's exactly right. Most people don't know. I mean, we are privy to this information because we're part of a certain group we can't mention. That's great. That's really good code. If you ever want to pretend you know something, just say we're part of a certain group. Just got to be careful that it doesn't somehow sound like you're saying you're part of the Ku Klux Klan. As long as it's not that, we frequent a certain group that excludes a certain other group. No. But yeah.
We know secrets about the urban community because we frequent a particular group that is very... exclusive.
No. Shriners. No. Urban group is people who drive small cars. Oh, God. Oh, we need to watch our language. We really do. But yeah, we know that Jim Henson blew his brains out. And people don't. I mean, people don't like
all
to
over
hear
the
that.
Place.
Exactly right. Very colorful.
Did you ever. Harry made you watch Wish You Were Dead, right?
Which one was that?
Weird. That's that one with that really weird movie with Mary Steenburgen and Cary Elwes.
Fucked up movie.
It's just that reminds me of that part when Cary Elwes's character is quoting Emily Dickinson, and then Doc from Back to the Future
Christopher Lloyd.
What's in the Christopher Lloyd is like, that's the kind of shit that got her killed.
That's right. You guys haven't done that on Why Did I Buy This yet?
Not yet. I don't think so.
You need to do that because that movie is fucked.
We actually watched it recently.
We should, now since it came up, you know, organically, we should mention that Why Did I Buy This is finally back. Yay!
Yay!
Woo! And if you guys don't know what
that is. So, for those of you who have,
go ahead.
Those of you who have no idea, it was a podcast that Ari and I started as an excuse for all of the movies that she has decided to buy on DVD and or Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
So the full name of the podcast is Why Did I Buy This? Explaining My DVD Collection One Movie at a Time.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes two movies.
And, yeah, well, it used to actually be two movies, but we would take our turns on them sometimes.
Good idea.
And so we did it for a while, and then when we moved to Idaho, just the world happened, and we just didn't have time to do it, and it fell by the wayside. But we, starting this today, I guess, today the day we're recording, I should say.
Indeed.
So in the past, when you're listening to this, we have started it up again. And you can visit it at www.wbidt.com.
Or W-D-I-B-T.
Why did I buy this? That one. I'm almost done with my scotch already.
Just go to stolendress.com. Don't listen to Dan. There's a link to the website there, too.
The place that you found this, you'll find that, I'm sure.
Uh-huh.
Or facebook.com/whydidibuythis.
Mm-hmm.
Or wdibtpodcast.tumblr.com now.
Okay.
Or wdibt, or was it twitter.com/wdibtpodcast.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you want to see an out-of-date site, you can go to myspace/wdibtpodcast.
That's
good. But I'm not going to update that anymore because no one gives a shit.
No, they really don't.
Mail at wdibt.com.
Do you have a P.O. box that you want to give out?
P.O. box WDIBT.
Suspicious.
That is suspicious. Suspicious.
So, yes, now it is our Thursday show. And this is finally going to have a regular schedule because I've never been able to decide when this podcast comes out. So it's going to be our Monday show now. So, Dan G's Comedy Hour is
our
Monday show.
It's a good way to start the week with our bullshit.
I know. It's so upsetting. You would think this would be one of those things you put... I was thinking it should be Friday because it's like, well, there's nothing... It's chaotic. And sometimes it's rambly and dumb. But it's fine. This is Monday. Levi's show is Tuesday. Comedy on Vinyl, as has almost always been, Wednesday. Why Did I Buy This is Thursday. And then some other shit that's coming up is going to be Fridays. There's going to be a new bi-weekly show, which is the spinoff of Comedy on Vinyl. Can't talk about it yet because we haven't recorded it yet. Maybe, you know, something happens. I don't know. Maybe somebody loses a limb. We can't do the show anymore.
Who knows?
A necessary podcasting limb.
Or maybe the goal of the show
is
that someone loses a limb every time.
That's not a bad idea. I'll ask Mike. Mike's hosting the show.
Yeah, that's cool.
So for those people who are out there, Mike, who's my producer on Comedy on Vinyl, who hasn't been on the show in a while, because he's a busy man, looking for a house, all this stuff, blah, 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 lives very far from me. He's going to host the new podcast. So it'll be good. It'll be fun.
You could name that podcast, What Does This Cost? Someone loses an arm.
Oh, okay.
And a leg.
Oh, I like that. That's a good idea. I'll talk to Mike. Somehow I have a feeling you're trying to get all of our podcasts to have question mark names.
It would be great.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll keep that in mind.
Comedy on Vinyl should have a question. Comedy on Vinyl?
Actually, to be fair, like, that is...
they do that?
That is fair because a lot of times it's been CDs. I got some crap from somebody who's a very nice man and a very big supporter of the podcast. He's like, I really think you got... And I'm like... And I rambled, you know, because of how I am. I just, like, spit back really quick on Facebook several lines of... it was a very long diatribe about why I thought he was wrong. And then I was like, well, you know, people do have the expectation, and so I'm trying to concentrate on the vinyl as much as I can, but, you know, sometimes there's nothing you can do. A lot of people also didn't listen to comedy albums, so at some point my potential listeners or guests are just going to die off. They're all dying, Dan. So,
what was I going to say? Oh.
I don't know.
We have a couple albums for you when we finally get around to sending you your Christmas box.
You do? That's nice of you.
In fact, we found some more since we loaded up the box. So we have to reload it.
Jesus Christ!
I think we're gonna do it this weekend.
Mm-hmm. That's nice of you.
So you can look forward to that.
I will.
There's some cool stuff in there. There's a thing you'll really like in it.
One thing?
At least one.
Okay, one thing. Oh, we talked about this on Why Did I Buy This, so I guess there's no reason. Did we? No. Did we talk about that estate sale I went to where I found all the computer stuff? I know I was texting you pictures from it.
We didn't discuss that. You only
okay.
We only talked about the papers.
Not to totally just pimp every other project I'm doing, but I'm finishing my book that's a fake history of the internet called Postmodem, The Interwebs Explained, and... I've been looking for some old prop computers for some photos. I have one photo that we need to actually shoot for the book. All the other ones are photoshopped historical photos, but there's one that I actually need to shoot for the book, and I need some computers as props. And I went to this estate sale that fucking had, like, I think I texted you a picture of a TRS-80, like a all-in-one TRS-80.
The all-in-one console,
yeah. And I really, really wanted it. I couldn't get it to run, but I don't know that the thing I plugged it into actually had any power, so I maybe should have committed to it, but they had that. They had these other, I don't know what they were. There's some kind of terminals with a bunch of words on the actual keyboards, or lights and words next to them on the keyboards. They were probably some kind of programming computers, or specific to aviation industry, because there are a lot of people out here who work for Boeing and for the other one. And I think it might have had something to do with that, because he also had all these possibly formerly classified fucking microfiche cards of fucking, like, really important aircraft that I was like, oh my god, these are, like, really cool blueprints and shit. And what the other ones? Oh, the first laptops, like the ones that were yay big, like, and weighed, I didn't pick them up, but I could tell they weighed about 60 pounds each. They're those kind, but that I think
do you remember
mostly...
the one that I had?
Yes, that's right. You did have one, but yours is a newer one.
Was it like
one.
That?
No, older. This is like literally one
older
of the
than
first.
That. Okay.
I could tell that it was like small, like a 3-4 inch screen
that you
could tell weighed a ton, and I think was only for people who were either rich or needed them for tactical purposes of some kind. They were probably military use. I can't remember what they had a name, some company name on them, but that, and then they had two old Edison dictaphones, and Edison made the first dictaphones. One recorded onto wire, and I mean literally onto pieces of wire. You could record sound. That was the first recording medium that wasn't wax, or that was like on a reel, before they had magnetic tape. I wanted one of those, and then I almost bought one that did cut onto like thin, almost cellophane thin red translucent records, and again dictaphones. So they would have been low quality, but the bitch with those is that they fucking... I looked at the wiring, and I'm like, this wiring looks like it's insulated with asbestos. Is that a thing? And I look it up, and it's like, everything before 1980 might have had asbestos. And I'm like, oh, fuck, so I didn't... And it was fraying, so I'm not going to deal with that and breathe that shit in, so... And it was only $25, Dan, and it worked, I think. And I really, really wanted it to be able to cut my own shitty quality records. One of these days, I'll find one that doesn't have a fraying... Maybe I will. Maybe it's the last one. Maybe I'm fucked. But anyway, thought that was fun.
You literally found the very last one in existence.
That would be the worst.
Good job. And then you just passed it over like all the women in your past.
That's exactly right.
It's funny because there's no women in your past.
And then one really nerdy, creepy guy got a bunch of that shit discounted too, because he just bought a bunch of and I'm like, motherfuck, he got everything I wanted. He's going to resell them and make money, so he doesn't appreciate them. He's not cool.
Probably, or he's going to use it for his Star Trek movie in his garage.
Could be. Have you seen the ones that those guys do? Where they're basically doing the continued adventures of the original series and different actors playing? It actually looks good now, like visually. It didn't used to look so great, but it looks really good now.
It's actually pretty popular, so they've probably gotten a bit of a budget.
Yeah, I've never watched. I mean, like, fucking Tuvok from Voyager's directed some episodes. Like, they've gotten people involved, and that's kind of neat.
Yeah.
So, like, those are kind of nerds. I mean, any kind of nerd I can get behind, but I can really get behind nerds who are, like, that obsessive.
Get
and, like,
behind them.
Yeah, I don't get it. Explain.
It's like sex, you see.
I got it. I got you now.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. So yeah, Dirk Benedict. Is there anything in here that we can like sample? Because I'm trying to.
So I was wondering, can we read maybe part of his bio, or
we can do that.
One of the other scripts.
We can do that. Let's see. Let's see, because the dialogue is the funniest bit, are the funniest bits. And another thing I think we've mentioned before, I really like biographies. They're fun to write just because.
Yeah.
Because they're factual. And I like making fake facts. And I don't know what that means. Maybe it means I have a severe mental weakness of some kind, but...
You do, though. You do. Mm-hmm. And we all know it, so it's okay.
Okay. Should we do, like, one of us reads the narrator and...
I think you should read the narrator.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll read Dirk.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I've had a glass of scotch.
I will tell you, now, I don't so think Dirk speaks.
I know I'll be in the mood now.
I don't think Dirk speaks in here anywhere, so because everybody's talking about him. So you can be...
No, there's a part right here.
Oh, okay. You found a place?
On page around 15.
Oh, okay. Oh, maybe...
There's a clip from a movie.
Oh, it's a clip from a movie. So let's see. So let's go... All right. we'll start from lost footage from Follow Me to Tulsa. This footage, not seen since 1944. This is a page bottom of page 15. 13, I'm sorry. This footage, not seen since 1943, was cut from the film at the end of shooting, supposedly due to the film's length. The song, shot only from one angle, is Carry Me to the Corral, being sung by Gail Majors herself. Then the song is sung partially. Oh, I thought, well, anyway, continuing.
Keep moving.
You can be everybody but the narrator. Dirk's next few years involved a string of successes, including the smash The Bellboy of Seville, a modernization of the classic opera The Barber of Seville. But his movie career was soon cut short when he, along with a string of other well-known movie stars, joined the war effort. Jonathan Blakeman, well-known movie star.
Well, Dirk was probably the greatest actor slash fighter pilot there ever was. He probably shot down over 300 planes, most of them Nazis.
However, on one of his fighting missions, Dirk was shot down over Greenland. He was sent home with an honorable discharge. Newsreel footage. Dirk is in uniform, coming out of a medical building, being escorted, and newsreel narrator speaks. Flashbulbs pop, etc. After a long stint in Europe, aiding the war effort, actor Dirk Benedict was shot down over Greenland. However, he was recently returned to the good old US of A in mildly critical condition. How does it feel to be back home, Dirk?
A little sore.
Laughing. After his recovery, Dirk decided to help educate the nation about the horrors of war. He did this with 1945's war epic, When Johnny Comes Limping Home. It was written by Dirk, and he also played the main character. Now, I don't know if When Johnny Comes Limping Home is in that list, which is interesting. Anyway, a clip from the movie is now shown. Loud gunfire can be heard, etc. Two men are in trenches, yelling over gunfire.
Charlie, get over here with that equipment!
Here you go. Captain?
Yeah?
Why are we here?
We're fighting the Jerrys, Charlie.
No, Captain. Why do we exist?
Dirk all of a sudden assumes an air of calmness, not yelling anymore.
Well, Charlie, we're all here for a reason. Mine's to help fight for freedom of this country. You, Charlie?
Yeah?
You're probably here to whine and ask questions, but we've all got our purpose.
All of us, Captain?
We...
Dirk is shot.
Captain! Oh, God, Captain, what'll I do?
Charlie's now holding the Captain.
Just take my place. You lead the men into the field of battle.
Charlie looks out beyond him, a slow pull towards his face. And that's just what I did. Just what I did. Dirk's compelling performance as Captain Jonathan Montgomery earned him an Academy Award nomination that year. But nothing could prepare him for the role that would set him apart from every actor in Hollywood. We will return with Dirk Benedict, Legend of the Silver Screen, after this. So every segment also ends with, but nothing could prepare him for the blah-bitty blah-blah-blah, and we never get to whatever that point is. Which, you know, for 19, I'm like, you know, pretty good. I did a good time. Most of it is narration, though, and there's like, but let's see, there are some really good bits. Chaz Whitney's in here. Chaz Whitney's a character we haven't talked about before. He's like my,
he's on page 20
What do you call him? My fucking talk show host character.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Page 20 has it.
There we go. Let's see. A clip from an early talk show appearance. A title screen from the Chaz Whitney show from the 50s is run for a second, but dissolves into the important part of the interview. The bottom of the screen reads The Chaz Whitney Show, 1953, which soon dissolves out. Now, I don't know if they've shown you this, Dirk, but this is from the movie, your latest movie. This is from, I believe, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, is that correct?
Well, this is quite amazing. The likeness is really quite amazing. I hope I don't know if the studio is sending me one of these, but...
Well, you can have that one.
Well, I was going to take it anyway.
Smiles and laughter from the hosts and Dirk. Laughter and applause from the audience. Fades into daughter and son inside the home of Julian Benedict, his son. He is 54. His sister, Stacy, is 33. His two children have some memorabilia on the shelf behind them. Julian Benedict, son. Who do you want to be?
You pick.
Okay. Oh, there's only him. So why don't you be him?
Dad loved that cup. Yeah, actually, here it is with the original picture. A little scratched up because I believe he let us play with it, but he loved this. He kept it until his death. What? Oh my God, it's been so long. Where is he?
So that's the... I don't know if that's the first, but his own son doesn't know that he's dead.
Yeah.
Oh, yep, synthetic cheese makes an appearance in this. After his first appearance on the Chaz Whitney Show in 1953, Dirk began a newfound interest in television and the possibilities of broadcast. And so, in 1957, after having finished only a handful of pictures at MGM, Dirk broadcast his first television show. A variety hour, the synthetic cheese Dirk Benedict Hour, sponsored by non-biodegradable food products synthetic cheese. The show, after a slow beginning, became the launching pad for several stars. You want to be Manny Da Silva?
Sure. Well, you know, if it wasn't for that show, for that man, I wouldn't have the career I have today. The show gave me the push I needed. He was a great man, too. He called me when he'd hear that I was down. He sent me a hooker or two. He was a great man.
So stupid. I'll be Bumpy Rhodes. I premiered my one and only teardrop on his show in 1959. If it wasn't for that show, I never would have made it to Broadway. He helped me a lot. So I would do these little things like that are just like basic, but like there's no joke there, but set it up for the dumbass characters, because I didn't want a dumbass in every interview. I just wanted a nice, strong character. But yeah, so that's how this thing... I was thinking of posting it, but I don't think I want to post it because I really like your idea of turning it into a radio play thing. Like, that'd be fun. Yeah. I could get some people in, get Ari in there. Ari could play like one of the ladies, or two of the ladies, maybe three, four, maybe five.
It depends on the culmination of the script.
Maybe eight.
Yeah, she could literally just play every character.
Maybe 10? I don't know. 11?
We could do it like a chorus effect. You could literally play 11 women at once.
That'd be great.
Or 12.
That'd be so eerie. Reading the same dialogue basically at the same time, being chorused in. That'd be good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we do have to end this episode early, Daniel. So, what are your final words? I feel like we should, we'll premiere that at some point. That'll be a lengthy thing on its own because it'd be like 30 minutes. It'd be like doing a whole new comedy album, but
yeah, you know,
that'll be good. What are your final words?
From Dirk Benedict. Thank you for coming on the podcast. We appreciate you being here.
And my final words are, Dirk, I hate to tell you this, but I think you're dead. Oh wait, what? Oh my God, Dirk, You're alive. I don't know how I was telling you that you're dead. Dirk's alive.
I'm alive, guys. I'm alive.
That's amazing.
Holy shit. Where am I?
Oh.
No, really. Where am I?
This is heaven. Hello. I'm St. Peter. I'm so sorry.
Oh, so I'm not.
You're alive in a heaven sense, which is to say dead.
Oh, I don't even know anymore. I'll see you later.
All right. That sounds good. Dan and Jay's Comedy Hour, the podcast, is a Stolen Dress Entertainment production. It's hosted by Dan Gomiller and Jason Klom and is edited by Jason Klom and produced by Maury Povich. The Dan and Jay's Community Service theme song was composed and performed by Brian Magic Hands Madison. Visit StolenDress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, rate us highly, and write us a shining review. You can like us on Facebook.com/DJCHour, follow us on Twitter @DJCHour, and find everything in one place at DanandJay.com.